Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome back to Head of the Pack, your favorite co-hosts, Matt Schneidman and Bill Huber here with you. It's 2:07 in the morning on Monday, I guess it is now. Packers 27, Bears 10. Packers needed this one. Trip to Tampa looming next week. 0-2 in the division, staring them down after a dismal loss to the Vikings in week one. I don't know about you, but this one went just about how I expected it to. You know, the defense wasn't great, but they had the cliche of bend don't break. I should say the run defense wasn't great. The Bears barely passed the ball. They had a big stand on fourth and goal from the 1-inch line that, sorry, my throat has been itching all night, so I apologize if I cough. Big stand on the one-inch line that kind of not sealed the game, but set the Packers up for essentially the game-winning field goal drive. And then, Bill, I want to start here. How good can Aaron Jones be if all week the Packers were basically telling everyone and their mother exactly what they were going to do on offense? They did it, and the Bears still couldn't stop them.
Yeah, that was a hell of a performance, Matt. So he had 170 total yards. I do yards after contact and broken tackles all the time during the game. I had him breaking 12 tackles, 12, by a 208-pound running back. So, I mean, he was fantastic. Both Riders and LaFleur both said they're just scratching the surface of what they can do with Jones and Dylan as a tandem. We'll find out next week, right, though, Matt? I mean, the Bears, this is not the 1985 Bears. It's not the 2010 Bears. It's not the, what, the Bears won in 2018 to win the division? It's not the 2018 Bears. This defense is not very good. Roquan Smith is great. Robert Quinn's great, but they're really short. We'll find out against the Buccaneers how good this group really is. But you're right. Everybody in the world knew exactly 7 days ago after LaFleur got the podium in Minneapolis, kicking himself and not giving the ball to Jones. Everybody knew where the ball was going, and they had no answers in the first quarter, no answers in the fourth quarter.
And, you know, Jones had 9.5 yards a touch last week when he got only 8 touches. And you'd think, he kind of joked, it was you who brought it up to him in the locker room on Monday, that he was in the top 10 all time in yards per carry. And he said, you know what, I'm trying to get to that number one spot. If I keep averaging 9.8, I might get there, because that's what he averaged last week. He might. I mean, he got more than double the amount of touches today, 18 touches today. Well, yesterday, I should say now, since it's Monday morning. And he averaged 9.4 yards a carry. Like, he had 18 touches, 170 total yards, 132 on the ground, 38 receiving. And the thing about Aaron Jones, as everyone knows, that makes him so hard to defend is the number of ways in which he can impact a game. Like, he can line up adjacent to Rodgers in the backfield and take a toss around the edge. You know, he can come in motion and do one of those pop passes that he took for a touchdown. I watched Rodgers and Jones do the scramble drill in practice the other day against no defenders. And then on a 3rd and 10 on the opening drive, Rodgers gets flushed out of the pocket. Jones comes out of the backfield and up the left sideline against a linebacker, Nicholas Morrow, and he did the same exact movement where he's facing Rodgers, and then he turns upfield on the left sideline, and Rodgers just lobs one over Nicholas Morrow, 15-yard catch to convert a 3rd and 10. We already knew he's, you know, that good at catching and running, but his numbers have steadily decreased the past couple of years since that 2019 season when he had almost 1,600 total yards, 19 total touchdowns, tied Christian McCaffrey for the league lead in that category because of the emergence of A.J. Dillon. But tonight, if anything, was a reminder that Aaron Jones is still a bad man, and if the Packers ever consider cutting him for cap relief after this year because they have to give Dillon a hefty second contract, they might want to think twice on that.
Yeah, they do have some cap problems, though. I mean, they're gonna have to do a major renegotiation on that. But you know, I think the good thing here is he only had 18 touches, right? I think the fear of when you have a smaller-ish kind of running back, not that Jones is small, but you're gonna get the guy killed in the long run by giving him too many carries. But 18 touches, that's seems like a good number, doesn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I mean. 2 years ago, he averaged just below 18 touches a game. Last year, he averaged a little below 16. So I think 18 is right in the sweet spot. There are obviously going to be drives where he gets... And listen, this isn't, you know, two touches every drive. I think it's better, I say better, you know, more suited for the long run... If he takes a drive off to give him a breather or give his body a rest, because AJ Dillon can handle the same amount of touches per game. So yeah, he's not going to get 18 touches every game. There will probably be more games this season where Rodgers and LaFleur say, man, we wish we would have gotten 33 the ball more. But I think 18 touches is right in that sweet spot. There will be games where he has in the 20s. There will be games where he has, you know, 11 or 12. That's just how it goes. But I think tonight was a good, you know, look at exactly where the Packers need to be with him. Because like you said, they don't want to run him into the ground. He's a guy who's dealt with some injuries the last couple years. But that's where having another 1A running back comes into play, because there will be very little drop-off, if any, when Dillon comes in. And you know, as we saw tonight, I haven't looked at the stat yet, but I wanted to see average depth of target for Rodgers. A lot of just small stuff.
6 inches, Matt.
A lot of small stuff. And guess what? It doesn't have to be an offense where Aaron Rodgers is bombing the ball down the field to Davante Adams every play. Like, the other stuff works. I thought the wide receivers blocked exceptionally well tonight. And that is a hidden key to make this offense work, especially when you're riding your running backs to the promised land like they did tonight.
Yeah, it seems like a good time to talk about the passing game too. Sammy Watkins, 4 targets. That's the most. I mean, this is like the anti-Davante Adams offense, Matt.
And it works.
Yeah, it does. So Watkins had 4. Jones, Cobb, Watson, Dobbs, Lazard, Dillon with 3. Tunyon 2, Tyler Davis 1, which I can't say that I actually remember happening.
It was a throwaway. I think, yeah.
So it is, what a transformation. Now, I don't know if this is going to work in the long run. I mean, it worked tonight or last night. We'll see when you go up against better defenses, if you can actually win a game with or anything like a go-to receiver. You know, Tom Brady's done it over the years with some of his lesser groups. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe it's against Tampa. Maybe it's against Buffalo here in, 5 weeks when that's a potential shootout. Can they win games with – look, Rodgers called Lazard a number one receiver. He's not a number one receiver. Not like the dictionary definition of it. But right. Tonight it was it LaFleur or Rodgers? God, I'm drawing a blank. They've got a whole bunch of passing plays, and they have, you know, a package for this guy and a package for that guy and a package for the next guy. It's not everything's meant for Davante Adams. There's some plays that work best for Lazard, some plays that work best for Dobbs, and so on. So it's an interesting way. We're just not used to seeing it. It'll be interesting to see in the long run, Matt, how this holds up.
Yeah, I think, and I asked offensive coordinator Adam Stenovich about that a couple weeks ago, I think, you know, if there is kind of a silver lining in not have, listen, no team is better without Davante Adams, but there may be a silver lining in the unpredictability of an offense, because LaFleur said, and or Rodgers said, and LaFleur confirmed that about 80% of the Packers passing plays were designed to go to Davante. Sure, teams couldn't stop it, but they at least knew what was going to happen. You know, in the Packers passing game now, you don't know if it's going to Lazard, to Watkins, to Cobb. Well, on third down, you know it's going to Cobb, since I'm calling it third and Cobb now. To Jones, to Dillon, to Tonyan. Like, the Packers, I agree with you in saying Lazard isn't the dictionary definition of a number one receiver. Maybe he's the first player on the Packers' unofficial wide receiver depth chart. But there are, but Matt LaFleur said it, none of the wide receivers, and I would group in Jones, Dillon, and Tonyan as the entire pass catchers group. Nobody has really separated themselves from the rest in terms of like a bona fide star pass catcher. And that can work. I don't see why it can't. Rodgers was asked tonight, is there a benefit to that? Like, can that work if you're really spreading it out like that, which hasn't happened here in the past, at least recently? He said, I think we're going to have to. The days of one guy getting 15 and then next guy getting 4 or 5 are kind of over. We're going to have to find ways to get different guys the football in different spots. There's a lot of different plays for specific guys, like you said, packages for a bunch of different guys. So, listen, it could be a different guy on every night, and that's the beauty of this offense, but it could also be their downfall because when they're in a pinch, they don't have a guy that they know they can go to on a quick out on 4th and 1 or to pick up a 3rd and 10. They have a bunch of guys who can do it, but there is nobody across the entire NFL who's more of a sure thing in those scenarios than Devontae Adams. So it'll be interesting to see this season how the Packers navigate that dilemma. I don't even know if I'd call it a dilemma right now since it worked out tonight. Anything else you want to touch on? Here's one more thing I want to touch on offense, and I'll let you go into this since it was your question. You asked Aaron Rodgers about Elgton Jenkins in what maybe wasn't his best game on the field, and I thought he had an interesting response.
It was really good. I prefaced it by saying it wasn't his best game, and I meant that not in a cruel. I mean, he gave 2 sacks in the first, 20 minutes probably. He was kind of running around a bit as a run blocker, not blocking people at times, but, I mean, still better than Royce Newman. But you could tell that Rodgers is really proud of him playing, appreciative of him playing. Look, this is, as we talk now, it's 2 days shy of 10 months. That's a hell of a comeback. He was on PUP a month ago, basically. And for him to be out here in this game, we've seen what's gone on with Bakhtiari, right? I mean, there's no, as much as people assume the ACL is a 10-month injury in your back, I think Green Bay knows awfully well that it's not. And LaFleur said tonight, and this was LaFleur's opening comments tonight, they would not have won this game without Elgton Jenkins, which is a hell of a statement considering Elgton Jenkins wasn't at his finest. But he'll get a lot better as things go on. And I know Yash, I'm going to get up a sack too, but that's not a bad line, Matt. If you got Nyman at left tackle and Jenkins, once he rounds into form at right tackle, that's pretty good. And I still think he's going to come back and they're going to get better. I know we keep saying this every podcast, but boy, just getting Jenkins out there, it just changes everything because Royce Newman is a terrible right tackle, right? He's not a bad right guard. Not great, but he's not bad either. So, that's where you lose, right, Matt? You lose on the edges. It's where Green Bay lost partially against Minnesota because they couldn't block Hunter and Smith. You feel a lot better with Nyman and Jenkins in those kind of matchups, and it'll be one next week against the Buccaneers.
I'm still convinced that, maybe the Packers would not have lost the last two playoff games that they lost if they had, their tackles in. Certainly, I think they would have beaten the Buccaneers if they had Bakhtiari. And last year, they didn't have Bakhtiari or Jenkins, and they had, they should have put Yash Nyman out there, but they put Billy Turner and Rick Wagner out there. So healthy tackles are very important. But yeah, LaFleur said it transcends his level of play, what he brings to us regarding Elgton Jenkins. So listen, just having number 74 back out there, not only is he a very good offensive lineman, but it just makes the quarterback more at ease, makes everyone else more at ease knowing you have that security blanket. And sure, tonight wasn't his best night. But like you said, it's a position that he hasn't played all that often. It's his first game back from a major knee injury. So there's definitely going to be some of that, can I trust my knee? You got to get used to moving on it again. But it's good to get those reps in, to ease back in against a team like the Bears, with all due respect, before they played the Buccaneers. Now, the Packers could have a similar dilemma with Bakhtiari. I believe Ian Rappaport said on Pat McAfee's show this past week that the Packers were targeting week three for Bakhtiari. He also said they were targeting week three for Jenkins. Then he obviously played tonight. So perhaps there's we might actually see David Bakhtiari this week. The Packers clearly thought he'd be ready within the first four games, or else they would have kept him on PUP. So maybe week three is the week. And are there more ideal opponents to come off a major knee injury against than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and that pass rush? Sure. But the Packers can't be picky with this. You know, he's going to have to play at some point or another.
Yep.
And he's going to start at left tackle when he does. And, you know, we can go through those scenarios. I think it'll be Bakhtiari, Runyon, Myers, Newman, and Jenkins when it does happen, with a pretty solid swing tackle in Yosh Nijman coming off the bench.
Yeah, here's the quote from Rodgers about Jenkins, and my computer was glitching, so I couldn't find it earlier. The definition of success isn't always measured in stats, and for Elton, I thought tonight was an absolute success. I really do. He's been out for a long time, and he's battled in practice, and he's battled in his rehab, and he went out there and played in an NFL football game. That, to me, is a successful night. A lot of times we get caught up in a definition of success that's never really attainable. So we live in this feedback loop of negative self-talk and self-criticism that I don't think is good for a healthy ego or good for our own self-confidence. So that was a hell of a line by Rodgers, who frankly didn't care they got sacked twice by Jenkins' man.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, other side of the ball. Better. You know, after that first drive where the Bears just marched down the field, the Packers really put the clamps on the Bears. And listen, it's only year two. I've watched Justin Fields play three times now. The guy doesn't impress me. I mean, no. I was having this talk with Kevin Fishbane, who covers the Bears for us, on the drive back. He drove me back from the stadium to my apartment. And like, I don't think the guys in Chicago are sold on him either. And he brought up a good point. The David Montgomery was running well, and so was Khalil Herbert, and Fields had some success on the ground. But even so, what does it say about Luke Getsy? We know him well around here. What does it say about Luke Getsy's faith in his quarterback that he only threw 11 times tonight? My point is, it's not the most intimidating offense, but the Packers defense did what they had to do. And after week one, it's not a sure thing that what you think will happen will happen, like covering one of the best wide receivers in the league, like Justin Jefferson. Packers didn't do well against the run tonight, but against the pass, they obviously did really well. The opportunities they were given. The Bears averaged 6.7 yards per carry, but like I said, and this has been the story with the Packers defenses of years past, they're not good against the run, but they are opportunistic. Like, the Bears march down the whole field, and then the Packers get the stop on the 1 yard line. And Matt LaFleur said it. Sure, they wouldn't have liked to give up some of the yardage, but they made plays when they needed to. And Matt LaFleur said it, and I agree with him. You give up 10 points in an NFL game, you don't complain about that.
No, that's a pretty good night's work. That, you know, after that opening touchdown, you go, the drive log is amazing. Chicago's next five possessions. Three and out punt, -2 net yards. Next drive, three and out punt, -2 net yards. Next drive, three and out punt, 4 yards. Three plays in halftime. They come out of halftime. Three plays, 7 yards, punt. That is 13 plays, 10 yards, zero first downs.
Sounds good to me.
Look, Jefferson, Justin Fields stinks. I mean, right? I mean, there is a one time he had St. Brown wide open deep against Stokes, and I swear he looked at him. He didn't throw him the ball. By the same token, Darnell Mooney's a pretty damn good receiver. One catch minus 4 yards, that was when Rasul Douglas blew through a Cole Kmet and dropped him for a loss on receiver screen. So, again, he's not Justin Jefferson, but he's a pretty damn good player. Packers shut him down. Pass rush, I thought, was strong all night. The tackling was terrible against Montgomery and even Herbert as well.
Sounds like a Joe Barry defense.
It does. So, obviously, Brady's a whole different animal, Matt. It'll be interesting to see who's their receivers next week, because Godwin was out with a hamstring. Probably doesn't play against Green Bay. Maybe doesn't play. Who knows? I did not see the Mike Evans fight. You did. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's suspended. I mean, it's the NFL. Probably not, but maybe, right?
I mean, he decked the shit out of Marshawn Lattimore, I think it was. They've had a long history, but yeah, Mike Evans got ejected. I don't think he'll be suspended, but listen, old friend Scotty Miller.
Julio Jones is hurt, Matt.
He's hurt.
That's something.
I mean, listen, that's the thing with the Buccaneers, and we'll kind of use that to look ahead because we don't do a preview podcast. We just do these post-game podcasts. The Buccaneers are banged up front. Leonard Fournette's a good player, but Brady doesn't have Gronk. Brady doesn't have his full staple of wide receivers, regardless of whether Mike Evans plays or not, which I think he will again. Buccaneers defense is elite. They're studs. They've given up 13 points in two games this season, 3 to the Cowboys, and then 10 to the Saints on Sunday in week 2. So the Packers offense will have their work cut out for them. But this isn't the Buccaneers offense of years past. You know, I think they scored 19 points in week 1, then 20 in week 2. This could be a rock fight. And do I think the Packers will win? Gun to my head, no. But I think it's a winnable game. And me, you, and Rob Domofsky were talking tonight, even if the Packers lose this game and start 1-2, their next 4 games after that, Patriots at home, Giants in London. Well, Giants are 2-0. I should probably show them some more respect, but I'm not going to. Jets at home. Jets had a nice comeback win today, too. Jesus, Patriots also won. You get what I'm saying. And then, so Patriots, Giants, Jets, Commanders. Those are 4 games the Packers should win. So even if they start 1-2, they could very easily be 5-2. So listen, I know I'm setting expectations low here. I think if they win this game in Tampa, it would be a steal. I remember going down to Tampa a couple of years ago. Packers got their absolute doors blown off. They were up 10-0. Then I believe they lost 38-10 or something like that. But there are flaws in this Buccaneers team more so than in years past. And the Packers, if they play like they did on defense for stretches of tonight's game and tighten up some things against the run, maybe they sneak out of Tampa with a win. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm going through the game logs. I remember trying to think of the Jones games against Tampa. 2020 regular season, 10 carries, 15 yards.
Yeah, that was bad.
NFC Championship game, 6 for 27. Fumbled twice and got hurt. So the Buccaneers have done a heck of a job on him. Obviously, it's different teams, right? But they're going to have to come up with some fresh ways to get Aaron Jones the ball against a defense that's really had his number.
Yeah, so listen, Packers did what they had to do tonight. I think lose this game in its panic mode.
Yeah.
They did what they had to do. Rodgers wasn't happy with how they played in the second half. They obviously only scored 3 points in the second half, but wins are never easy to come by in the NFL, and he knows that. And he said he would really enjoy this win, and as he should. Listen, this is a different Packers team, and I think the early parts of this season are about finding different ways to win, because we knew how they would win games the past couple years. Passing game, passing game, passing game. Yes, they had a running game. Yes, they had an opportunistic defense, but you had a passing attack that could override all that and win any game. But they might not have that this year. They're going to have to ride their defense some games. They're going to have to ride their running game. Some games it'll be a balanced passing attack. And there's always the cliche of what's this team's identity. They might not have a set identity this year, but if they can keep finding different ways to win, they'll be just fine. And I think still Matt LaFleur kind of pushed back on this idea, but still no consecutive regular season losses. They had lost three straight games, week 18 against the Lions, playoffs against the 49ers, week one against the Vikings, but still haven't lost two straight games in the same regular season. So I think there's something to be said about that, and it kind of restored the faith here in Green Bay that maybe it's not on paper as good of a team as the last couple of years, but I think this team can still be pretty good.
That really is a remarkable stat, even though LaFleur did downplay it, and he's downplayed every time it's been brought up. The three-game losing streak, you know, I guess I'm looking at it from the point of bouncing back. Like they had to bounce back from this game. That three-game losing streak, there's no bouncing back. Week 18 was a meaningless game. You lost. Who cares? You lose to the 49ers in the playoffs. Well, you're not bouncing back from that 7 months later, right? It's a fresh start. So, to me, that's a hell of an achievement. And it says something about all of his stupid cliches about hitting the reset button and going 1-0 is cliche as that stuff is. It works on those guys. And, of course, it helps to have the quarterback who's damn good and is going to prevent a lot of losing streaks. But losses sit a lot worse for the fans than the team. Not that the team doesn't care, but these guys are pros. They get it. They move on. They've done a hell of a job with that. So kudos to the coach for pushing the right buttons, even if it's a cliche reset button.
And one more thing I wanted to touch on before we get out of here. I feel we owe it to the Packers special teams, given how disastrous last year's Sunday night game against the Bears was at Lambeau Field. No catastrophes today. They had a couple nice tackles on kickoff coverage. Amari Rodgers had a 20-yard punt return. Pat O'Donnell is pretty good so far. He can really boom the ball, has a couple nice placements, gets the ball off in time. I thought the punt protection, at least on the surface, at first glance, was much better than it was against the Vikings. Listen, tonight is the perfect example of what the Packers special teams need to be. What that if that happens every night, what happened tonight, they won't be a top 15 unit. They may not even be a top 20 unit. But if they can be 21, 22, 23, that makes a world of a difference over what they were last year, which was dead last in 32. Because last year's primetime home game against the Bears, you had Jakeem Grant have that 97-yard punt return for a touchdown. You had an onside kick go out of bounds, I believe. You had Malik Taylor stepping out at the 5-yard line on a kickoff. And there were a couple other things that went awry. Tonight, ho-hum Mason Crosby, 28 and 40-yard field goals. Extra points were great. Amari Rodgers, nice return. Clean punts from O'Donnell. Clean protection. That's all they need.
I was going to mention that too, Matt. Actually, I'm more bullish than you are.
Okay. Let me hear it.
They tackled the Bears inside the 25 on all but, well, I guess, two kickoffs. They had one late. So they consistently won the field position battle there. O'Donnell's punted well. You mentioned the punt protection. I get it. Just don't screw things up, right, Matt? Isn't that the goal?
Yes.
And you're right. And they're not screwing up anything. The rookie long snapper looks like he's pretty damn good. As much as maybe it was just me, thinking, what are these guys doing? You got a 100-year-old special teams coordinator and an 80-year-old punter or kicker.
That's disrespectful. Don't disrespect Rich Versace like that.
I understand, but the point is they have all these veteran guys at these positions, and they have a rookie long snapper who never long snapped in a game situation for a punt since high school. But by God, he looks like he's okay.
Yeah.
And Donald Levitt's been really good. Rudy Ford covers punts damn well. The Bears coordinator is Richard Hightower. He was the coordinator of last year's 49ers special teams. So, obviously, we all know how that season ended. And like you mentioned, the punt protection was fine. So, I think these guys are – they might be okay. Again, you're right. They're probably not going to be a top 10 unit without any great returns, like kickoff return stuff. But and I know Amari Rodgers did cough up the one punt. But all in all, a pretty good game.
That's a good summation.
Things are trending up. Especially after the preseason, right, Matt? Because people are thinking, oh, my God, they can't cover punts. They got 12 guys in the field. They got 10 guys in the field. It's the preseason. None of that mattered. Gutekunst has brought in some special teams guys, and they've responded pretty well.
That's a good summation for how everyone should feel about the Packers after week two. They might be okay. So
yeah,
that's how it is.
Pretty much, right?
I will be in Tampa next Sunday, and I will Zoom with you from there. I'm looking forward to the weather down there. Just kidding. But for Bill, I'm Matt. You know where to find us, SI, The Athletic, all week. Let's get this season rolling. 1-1. Spirits are looking up for Packer fans, at least if my finger is correctly on the pulse of Twitter. But appreciate you guys listening as always, and we'll talk to you next week.